This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The Department of Homeland Security affirmed just how important agriculture is to the United States. DHS says public health, law enforcement, food and agriculture, defense, and 12 other industries are critical and should keep their usual work schedules to help respond to the outbreak. The guidance from DHS is designed to help limit potential confusion as some state and local governments implement various curfews or bans on large gatherings to slow the spread of coronavirus. To help explain what critical infrastructure means for us here in central Illinois, I recently spoke with Heather Hampton Nodal. Heather, with the critical infrastructure workforce being implemented first by the president back on Monday the 16th, he issued with that with the Department of Homeland Security, kind of outlined what was critical and what was not so critical during this time of the coronavirus. Of course, one of those big things is agriculture, and with your expertise and in many hats that you wear, you've been a part of some of these meetings in the past to plan for incidents like this. So maybe if you'd share with us what one of those meetings were and how now that we're in this unfortunate time that it's needed to be implemented, what that kind of covers.
Well, I think on a local level, one that is directly applicable to where we find ourselves in Montgomery County and in central Illinois is the critical infrastructure and key resources planning process. This is an exercise that, and it's more than an exercise, it is a plan that is developed through the work of emergency management professionals and volunteers in the area. And with Montgomery County, I had the opportunity to be part of that representing agriculture within the last 3 or 4 years or so. And that's a process where, just like the name implies, critical infrastructure and key resources are identified. So, for example, the power plant at the point when it was operable, but definitely the transmission lines going through the county, any natural gas pipelines, and we look at agricultural facilities. So with that fertilizer and chemical containment and transportation, grain handling, food processing, every aspect of that food supply chain. Well, it's actually food, fiber, and fuel when you think about ethanol and biodiesel as well. So we looked at not only the county, but regional relationships within the state and also intrastate relationships in that planning process across industry sectors as well. So how would agriculture intersect with health, for example? Agriculture and energy are tightly intertwined, as energy is with everything, emergency services and rescue and so on. So I guess it's a comfort to know that so many talented and informed people, I'm not including myself in that set. I'm saying there were a lot of other people who knew a lot more who were at that table. And I was glad to be part of it to try to say, hey, you know, we need to be talking to X, Y, and Z. But that kind of process has already been in place to help prepare for just this sort of situation.
And that's kind of a testament to how the emergency management agencies of Montgomery, Christian, and the local counties have already kind of worked these, I guess you could say, almost apocalyptic type events where we hope it never happens, but this is the plan in case it does happen.
It is. We're really fortunate to have people like Joe Gasparich in our county and Glenn Savage when he was chairman of the emergency committee at the county level. I mean, and others, so many other employees. The sheriff's office constantly running both desktop exercises and other practice drills. The health department. We really have some really good, competent people, and that really gives me confidence in exactly this kind of a situation.
And then, as we were saying, as it relates back to agriculture, this incident with the coronavirus kind of hits at a unique time because everyone in the ag sector, we're getting ready to gear up for hopefully a successful planting season. And then you throw this in there, that could kind of slow it down. But I guess for the first time in about 15 months, some of us might be kind of thankful it is raining. That's kind of delaying the process a little bit. And hopefully the rain stops as soon as this coronavirus outbreak stops and we can hit the field.
Yes, I think sunshine would help everybody, right? I think from a health standpoint and being able to get things done. But initially a lot of farmers were concerned that grain terminals, for example, might close just based on their corporate approach to employee safety, and which you respect that and you understand that, but also hoping they will take and have taken precautions so that this larger supply chain that is global can continue to operate so people have the food that they want when they need it. And, on a federal level, I was just thinking too, Gabe, that it was several years ago, actually, during the Obama administration, I think round two, and I forget exactly which committee I was serving on, but that was my first glance at the Defense Preparedness Executive Order, which is essentially what President Trump had activated last week. And at the time, when I first read that, I was deeply concerned, and frankly, can still be concerned because of the broad language in that order that could allow the executive branch of our government to take over essentially means of production. So, I mean, the actual wording in that, you could interpret it as they could direct a factory that is in the business of combine production, for example, to say, well, you should completely cease that type of operation and retool to do X. Or we think this factory should be closed down or this one should be open and so on, which I don't see that being exercised. I think it's more of a collaborative approach, saying at this point, definitely, more of a companies, how can you step up and maybe do this? Like, we're reading about different plants being retooled by the company's decision or to remain open, not to move to Mexico. I read that on one of the Health-Fi-related companies. So I think it's interesting just to be aware of, hopefully this is an opportunity for people to learn more about government, really, and what kind of powers exist in what situations, and then think, if you were put in that position, how would you judiciously apply that and wisely use that, where I think right now we've struck, it appears to be a pretty good balance of seeking companies to voluntarily please come to the table and how can you apply your resources to this situation versus a more command and control type approach.
And with the closures of schools throughout the country due to the coronavirus outbreak, farm kids are now home on the farm most of the time. And due to the advancements in technology, most students today are now taking their courses online. That even includes most students who attend college. But a direct impact here in mid-Illinois is the lack of reliable internet, specifically broadband infrastructure.
Right now, we're seeing the need for it roll out immediately. I just had two emails from teachers this morning, or that I read this morning, they sent last week, where now that they have to work from home, both of them are explaining how they have internet difficulties, so it changes the scope of what they're able to cover with the student. And this is with a parochial school, so they are still grading. It's a slightly different than, I think, some of the public schools' approach right now. So it was a very real reminder of our limitations in rural areas. But at the same time, the irony was, I'm communicating with the chairman of a working group, and I am the vice chairman of a working group to look at deploying broadband across rural America. And what we were just discussing was, and this was an appointment by the Federal Communications Commission, and today is our first conference call with representatives, other appointees to the working group from across the country. So we were just trying to formulate that agenda and tighten it down a little bit. But this question of, ultimately, how do we deliver this to the last mile and to the last acre, because we are working within the context of a precision agriculture task force. So the data needs, when we look at precision agriculture and coming from whatever acre of the field or the ranch or wherever you may be in U.S. territory, how do we effectively deploy this infrastructure in a way that allows not only for downloading information but uploading information? And so that work, as you said, is continuing. We see lots of funding opportunities right now, and that's where the chairman of this working group and I work. He's from Kentucky. And we were just kind of not commiserating, but noting that so many of these funding opportunities are rolling out at the federal and state level, but yet will it really reach the last mile? And, you know, will the money be sent by the time we actually get the recommendations here? But some of these things are not in our control, like the length of time it takes to vet candidates and make appointments and do everything that has to be done according to the letter of the law. It can sometimes be a frustration, even though it does have to be done. We just feel like we're always behind the curve instead of getting in front of it. But we're making an effort, like I said, our first conference call today, try to gather input and then identify what next step will be taken within our working group to contribute to that larger effort.
Here on our local level, of course, CTI is making great leaps and bounds with expanding their broadband service to the county, but their struggles that they're having to deal with is, of course, right now, weather, and then if coronavirus throws another wrench into the problem. Have you maybe heard anything on, at least before coronavirus became an issue, how the progress is going here in Montgomery County with CTI? Of course, they've released many of the other rural communities in the county that they'll be expanding to, but have you heard how that project is going here for this year?
Well, just in general terms, they were saying they're on target for where they, as far as building out and laying fiber. I did just read a note from them where they will not be doing the home installs for now, but they're still dedicated to this getting fiber in the ground. But they're trying to protect their employees and protect consumers at the same time by limiting those home install and home service. They also do a really good information tech services. So I'd seen that. But I think that, yes, they are still building out. And we're also seeing other companies like Royale continuing to upgrade their services, upgrade their equipment, and kind of put more in the ground. So I think a lot of the companies are stepping up their game. And I think that CTI has had a large role to play in that.
And, of course, just making that expansion throughout Hillsboro, the major thing just to show that they are a part of the community, that they're offering the free Wi-Fi in downtown Hillsboro. That's excellent for those businesses in downtown that are in maybe an older infrastructure type of building that would be harder to get that in their business, but then they're already offering free Wi-Fi, at least for their customers through town. And then when you think along lines of maybe old settlers, you've got free Wi-Fi for your cell phone during Old Settlers. That's something that's extraordinary for Hillsboro, let alone any small community.
Yes, I think that that's just another example of their commitment to communities, and it's real. They're walking the walk. They aren't just putting a slogan up on a billboard.
Exactly. And while I've still got you here, Heather, anything else you'd like to mention that we didn't cover that's going on in the world of ag that you've had your finger on or have been looking at to participate with here in 2020? I guess irregardless if we had the coronavirus or not, I'm sure that you've had a busy schedule.
Oh, yes, that's what's interesting. I've had, I think, four trips to Washington, D.C. canceled just in the last 2 weeks on different groups and priorities, but I think there's still communication and ongoing things for things like this could be the year for infrastructure, physical infrastructure. And there was a lot of agreement, I think, on both sides of the aisle that things need to be done for road, rail, air, rivers, especially rivers, and now that we're looking at potentially another flood season. So, yes, I think that's one of the leading topics of discussion, aside from how we deal with this. I think this also prompts gives more strength or conviction to the protection of our livestock herd from viruses like ASF and other things that we've seen in the past, FMD in the past, foot and mouth disease. Yeah, there are a lot of discussions going on, but right now the way we're having those discussions are being modified. So I guess I'm kind of in that staying tuned and trying to keep my schedule updated for some of these discussions.
And again, that was Heather Hampton Nodal. Moving on now with a check of ag weather. The Midwest and other parts of rural America were hit hard by flooding in the spring of last year. Unfortunately, flooding is once again in the forecast for 2020. Bryce Anderson, senior ag meteorologist for DTN, says the good news is the flooding forecast isn't quite as widespread as it was a year ago.
We're seeing more of a sectorized flood prospect this year than we went through a year ago. In the northern section of the belt, particularly north of Interstate 90, conditions are still quite likely to have flooding, at least at some point during this season. And then over the eastern Midwest, the Ohio Valley, the mid and lower Mississippi Valley, and then eastward through Illinois and Indiana and Ohio, rainfall during this spring is likely to be the heaviest, and so that's going to cause some flood potential there.
Other parts of the Midwest likely won't see as much flooding as they did in 2019.
There still will be some flooding in the immediate Missouri River Valley. There's no doubt about that. But over quite a bit of the remainder of that western, southwestern part of the Midwest, we're not seeing the threat show quite as much potential as a year ago. So there's some areas that are likely to have some problems this year, but not everybody like a year ago. So it's a lot more variable, a lot more sectorized than last year.
Anderson says it goes without saying that the true extent of any flooding problem will depend on the level of spring rainfall. One area in particular that's been in flood stage for a year is the James River Basin. that makes its way through eastern North and South Dakota.
The James has been in that state for a long, long time. Last year, South Dakota was the state that had the largest amount of prevented planted acreage claimed, so they really got an incredible amount of precipitation. The situation is still quite high in the forecast percent for probability of at least some minor flooding in the Red River of the North.
Portions of the Midwest went through a March thaw thanks to above normal temperatures. Anderson says that should help somewhat when it comes to the spring flooding potential.
The fact that the snow has melted is a testimony to how mild the winter was compared with last year, because in January and February, by and large, temperatures were above normal, and that did allow for snow melt to take place. And one thing that we see for a benefit there is that there's not likely to be quite as much moisture translate into the river and stream beds all at the same time.
And again, that was DTN Senior Ag Meteorologist Bryce Anderson. Moving on to local ag news now here on your Wednesday morning. The Montgomery County Farm Bureau is asking for donations of new and unused N95 masks. Local hospitals like St. Francis in Litchfield and Hillsborough Area Hospital are in great need of them at this time, and N95 masks are generally the same masks that farmers often use when cleaning out grain bins. To help keep local medical personnel safe, as well as the patients they are in contact with, the Farm Bureau is asking that farmers who have a few extra masks consider dropping them off at the Montgomery County Farm Bureau office on the Courthouse Square in Hillsborough. The drop-off will be tomorrow, Thursday morning, from 9 until 11. They will then be delivered directly to local hospitals in Montgomery County. Your safety when delivering these masks is also critical to the Farm Bureau. Therefore, a box will be located just inside the front entrance of the main office, where you can simply open the door and drop them off. Due to the shelter-in-place order, the Farm Bureau is asking that you only get out to drop off the masks if you feel your trip is considered essential and you're not suffering from a current illness. That decision will be at your best judgment, however. The Farm Bureau would like to thank you for whatever part you can do for those keeping us safe during this challenging and unprecedented time. The Hillsborough FFA chapter met on Sunday the 15th for their monthly meeting and election of the new slate of officers. Elected for the next year for FFA at Hillsborough are President Madison Malloy, Vice President Preston Lyerla, Secretary Will Spicer, Treasurer Peyton Wilson, Reporter Maria Hernandez, Sentinel Reese Morford, Historian Claire Tester, Parliamentarian Ethan Blackburn, and Chaplain Logan Meyer. This new slate of officers will be installed at the Hillsborough FFA Chapter's annual banquet, which will now be scheduled at a later time. And in our last news story from the local area, due to the circumstances involving the COVID-19 outbreak and the order to shelter in place, the Montgomery County Soil and Water Conservation District is sorry to announce that they have had to postpone their spring fish sale, which was scheduled for Tuesday, April 7th. The office staff is hoping to be able to reschedule this sale for later in the spring or begin to make plans for the annual fall fish sale. Refunds will be made to those who have already submitted their orders and payments for fish. Staff members apologize for any inconvenience this may cause, but the Soil and Water Conservation District Board of Directors and staff would like to thank you for your continued support of the Soil and Water District in Montgomery County and all of their programs. Anyone with questions is asked to call the Montgomery County Soil and Water District office at 532-3361, extension 3. And that'll wrap it up for this Tuesday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have ag news for us as it relates locally here to the area, those items can be sent to us at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com.